Hello, everyone. Welcome to How Do You Spirit podcast. And we're so excited to have Austin and Mike from Cat and Cauldron. Austin was a guest when we did our spooky stuff. And we have Mike with us today, and we're so excited. Yeah. And they actually drove here in a snowstorm. So we're so grateful, right? So I always like to share in the beginning some things that maybe have happened with myself or Chelsea. She's behind the scenes today. Or even with Austin and Mike about some maybe a spiritual experience that might have happened to us in the last week. And one of the experiences I have is I have been listening to, I'm an audio book person, mm-hmm. and I've listened to a few books about Hecate. Mm-hmm. And I finished one, and then I started with another one. And so I decided to start doing some meditations okay. in the morning. And I've done a couple this week, Monday and Tuesday. And I'm typically not the meditation type. Like, I will meditate in my car when I'm listening to, you know, loud metal music. But I'm not one to really sit down and do that. Mm-hmm. But I had purchased the deck because we went to the class. And mm-hmm. we're going to talk about that too in a minute. But so I did a little meditation here in front of my little altar that I'm working on. And then I asked for guidance from her. And I pulled a card each time on the separate day. Mm-hmm. And one day I pulled two cards, but twice the same card came up and offering me guidance for growth mm-hmm. and like put yourself out there. And that is something I have been struggling with. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so grateful. But it was an amazing experience. I could totally feel the energy, her energy. And this is so bizarre, but when I really started getting deep into it, I wanted to start moving my head in circles. Mm-hmm. Why? Do you have answers?
Well, I've been on before, so I'll give my two cents and we'll have I'll let Mike kind of do his thing.
Yes.
But it sounds to me like you were entering into a light state of trance, which okay. is actually very common when connecting with Hecate or Hecate, uh-huh. because she is a goddess that is liminal, and we need to be in that very in-between space
okay.
when receiving or doing work with her.
Okay.
So that's... That's very common.
Really?
It happens to me all the time.
Okay. That's crazy. And Mike?
I would second that. I think that when we're doing that kind of work, I think that a lot of people, by nature, we tend to kind of shift our focus to, you know, kind of the mind and what mm-hmm. we maybe identify as to be a higher self or above.
Yes.
When I think more often it's actually good to ground that kind of work in the body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the body is very responsive to the spiritual work that we do. And when we're grounded in the physical, it can help us to kind of check out of process of analysis
mm-hmm.
that can sometimes short circuit our ability to connect with the spiritual.
Okay.
You know, so I would agree. It sounds to me like there was part of you that kind of settled into a process of trance.
Interesting.
In some way. And so if that happens again,
mm-hmm.
it's probably good for you to let that go.
Yeah.
Just to be there to let that happen.
Yeah, it happened and both times. It's just like I feel my head like, and I'm starting to do this. I'm like, what's going on? Anyway, but it was super cool. So that's been my experience this last week with some spiritual witchy stuff. Chelsea, do you have anything to add?
The most spiritual thing that I did was go to the sex magic class.
That too, yeah.
But I mean, I don't have anything else. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I did learn some new things, so yes. it was really good.
So we went to a class that Cat and Cauldron offered. It was a sex magic class. Was it the first one that you had done? Mm-hmm. No? Oh.
We've offered that class. That would have been the third time that we presented that class. Each time we've done it, we've had a different person present.
Okay.
You know, in past, we had I presented that class at one point.
Mm-hmm.
It was a couple of years ago. Prior to that, we had another person, another practitioner in the area who was kind of off doing their own thing now. They don't work with the shop anymore. People change. We pursue different paths, right?
Right.
And then the last time we had Wendy, who is one of the practitioners of the shop, Wendy the Witch, who's amazing. She presented. Mm-hmm. And we were really happy about that. We were happy to have her there because the majority of the people who were showing up for that class were women.
Right.
And I think it was
each really, time.
Really, yeah. Yeah. And I think it was really nice to have a woman presenting.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm sure it probably made people in attendance, primarily the women, a little more comfortable, to be hearing some of that information from another woman.
Uh-huh.
But we've taught that one before, and it is always a popular class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was interesting. First time for me.
I loved her. She was
awesome. She was fabulous. Mm-hmm. And Chelsea, on our way there, we were kind of talking about it. And she was like, "Are you going to get embarrassed, Mom?" No, I'm not. We're all adults, Come on. Anyway, but yeah, it was super interesting how you can take that sex energy and use it for spells or what else?
Well, I mean, it's generative energy. So you're taking the energy of creation, whether that is with two people or soloistically, mm-hmm. to essentially act as the jumping point or the oomph or the momentum behind the word.
Uh-huh.
And so it can be used for anything. That's one thing that a lot of people... That's one of the reasons why I don't necessarily like doing big labels when it comes to magic and witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we get those labels, we get really into those corners of, well, this is what this is. Mm-hmm. Sex magic always involves this, and it's always going to involve things that are centered around lust and da 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 da. And that's not necessarily untrue, but it's not all it can be used for.
Mm-hmm.
Just like candles can be used for more than protection and cleansing. Candles could be used for healing work. Candles could be, you could not even burn a candle and utilize it in a spell. So you have all these different ways of going about it. And so when we get into the labels of glamour witch, sex witch, money witch, rice, whatever witch you're claiming, mm-hmm. it seems a little reductive. As much as it gives detail, it seems reductive because it takes away from not just that magical concept as a whole,
mm-hmm.
but it takes away from you as a whole person and your whole practice. Because even if you're someone who primarily does sex magic,
mm-hmm.
Are you utilizing candles in that? Are you utilizing oils? Have you utilized divination to divine what is going to be the best way to achieve this outcome? Are you utilizing particular positions that are aligned to particular symbols? So when you're looking into those things, it is more than just that. It can go deeper and can be utilized for anything, really.
That's amazing. Yeah, definitely interested in coming to some more of those.
We teach a lot of classes at Cat and Cauldron. That's actually one of the big things that we're known for. Mm-hmm. And
We're known for our classes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That one in particular, to kind of just add real quick, maybe before we shift gears on that. That class, I think, is a popular one, and as I mentioned previously, and if you think about the whys behind that, that class, the topic of sex magic, when you think of something like that and its place within just spiritual practice in general, I think the probably safe to say that the majority of adult people out there are sexually active,
right?
In some way, shape, or form.
Why not incorporate something that you're already involved in into your spiritual practice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
in a constructive and in a healthy way.
Yeah,
And I think that also goes one step further when I use the term healthy, right? A big component of what we do in the pursuit of witchcraft is helping people to connect to individual spiritual practice in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that you can really do that is to fully integrate mm-hmm. all aspects of your being, which mm-hmm. is going to also include your sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And releasing stigma and shame and repression around it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am not your typical Like, I know that just made me sound like I'm like, you know, from the 60s and 70s, which, you know, yeah, all that, but it's all according to everyone else. But being able to release your inhibitions, in any form of magical work is so important, because it's through that release that we can truly reach ecstasis. Mm-hmm. And by reaching ecstasis, we can truly touch and access such potent magical threads and weaves and realms and energies that we truly can see that manifest quite quickly and realistically in the real world.
I love that. Wow. So how long have each of you been practicing for? Mike.
Oh, I'm going first. Oh, okay. You know, I get asked this a lot, and I always kind of fumble with an answer, because so I grew up in a household, mm-hmm, where, you know, my mother did this, and her mother did this.
Okay.
You know, and so when I'm asked that question, I always hesitate in giving an answer, because there's a part of me that always wants to go, well, this has kind of always just been life.
Yeah.
You know, but then I also have to kind of consider that, because I'm kind of the opinion that practice is something that should be conscious.
True. Right? Yeah.
You know, and makes sense. So you can say, oh, I grew up in a household where everybody did this, and so this has just always been a part of my life. And, mm-hmm, like, and that's wonderful. Right. So you can say, yes, this has been a part of your life for, you know, however long you've been aware, been a part of your life. Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but I also think that it's something to consider, you know, like, when did you consciously choose to this? When did you consciously choose to continue to make this your practice?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because many people don't. So I have sisters who were raised the exact same way I do.
And they don't practice at all? Wow.
All pursued other spiritual paths.
Okay.
You know, and so in answering your question, I want to say I'm in my own conscious practice, it's been probably about 25 years.
Okay. Wow. Awesome. And what about you?
My answer is very similar to Mike's, actually.
Okay.
Grew up with it not necessarily being a big taboo or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had a grandmother who was from the South and family from the Appalachians and all this other stuff. And then I had my family from Italy. But I'm very much like Mike, because there are people out there who do, well, I've been doing it my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, but like conscious, when were you consciously aware and developing and working your practice?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to go with that, then I'm going to say about 2 decades. So 20 years. At the age of 13 is when my mama, who was my father's mother, that's when she started to decline health wise and was no longer very cognizant.
Mm-hmm.
When I was able to ask her questions, because I would always see her doing things, I'd ask questions and she talked to me. This is just what we do. And at that point, my Nona had been dead for many years. And so I just kind of started to pursue what everyone did at that time, which was Wicca.
Mm-hmm.
I started with, I remember the first book on Wicca I received was To Stir a Magic Cauldron by Silver Ravenwolf.
she was a big name.
She was a big name. I remember that my friend's aunt gave it to her, and my friend gave that book to me. And so I devoured that book. I lived that book. I did the cauldron salutes and the elemental salutes on a daily basis. I learned all the things, and apparently it was supposed to be intermediate magic.
Yeah.
And I found out that she had these other books, and so I went hardcore deep into the eclectic Wicca, and then I found traditional Wicca, because I loved the act of ceremony.
Okay.
You know, I've always told Mike this, that if I were to ever just stop practicing magic, sorcery, or witchcraft, and like if something happens and we all have to become Christian for some reason,
yeah,
because that's easy. I could do that. I could be that.
There's a lot of ceremony in Catholicism.
There's ceremony in Catholicism. I still get to burn my incense. I can still pray to my saints.
Uh-huh.
Like I basically just turn into a little old nun. It'll be great. I'll be fine. So because there's so much of that in traditional Gardnerian Wicca, I really gravitated towards that. And then it just kind of like grew from there. And I moved away from traditional Wicca to pursue my more familial paths and pursue my own practice. And it just kind of has evolved into this thing. And I met this guy over here.
I was just going to ask. How did you guys meet? I was just going to ask that.
We met many years ago, kind of through an odd. It was an odd interaction. Basically, I was harassing Austin because I saw him wearing a pentacle. Yeah, he was 19 at the time. Still a kid. I've got just a few years on him. And he had a pentacle
around his chest. I received my first degree initiation, too.
Yeah. He was wearing a pentacle. And this was kind of the height of the Hot Topic goth
right
scene, you know, while all the other people were running around with pentacles and other occult symbolism, you know, all over themselves. And so I saw him wearing this pentacle, you know, and being a practitioner, I was like, do you, you know, like, do you even know what that means? You're just wearing that because you think it's cool,
right?
You know? you're just some goth edgelord, you know, and hassling him because he had this pentacle. And he fired back with, oh, well, actually, it means this. And he gave me like a whole, like,
were you like, what?
And I was like, oh. Okay, you're the real deal. You know what you're talking about. Forgive me, I'm so sorry. And that kind of was just the beginning of kind of just a like just a very casual. You know, we would kind of talk here and there. We'd bump into each other in the local community.
Yeah,
here and there. You know, and of course he was very caught up at this point. He was living further north.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was still in college.
Yeah.
All right.
And, you know, and he. So we weren't running into each other too frequently, you know, but we would see each other at local festivals and events for, you know, in the pagan community. And, you know, and we would chat, you know, and then, yeah. And over the course of several years, we kind of established a friendship.
Yeah. And then finally one day.
Now we can't stand each other.
Yeah. So finally, it just kind of happened. And. Really weird because I never thought in a million years I would be co-owning a occult and metaphysical shop out of a house.
Yes.
Out of a little house with my partner. I never thought in a million years that would be a thing. Because I was going to school for opera. I was going to school for performance. Mm-hmm. And I had accepted, like, I'm not going to get married.
Okay.
I'm going to be traveling and touring. That's going to be what I'm doing.
That's your life. I'm going to
be touring, or I'm going to be traveling to teach.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm going to accept this. And, well, the Saturn returns have a way of making you really prioritize certain things.
Yeah.
So my Saturn return happened. I had the worst competition experience of my life that really just kind of like woke me up to this. Like, it doesn't matter how good you are, how good your technique is, you're not what they want to look at on stage.
Oh.
So.
Wow.
So.
Oh, yeah, that community, the theater community is awful. Yeah, it's really bad.
Hey, y'all don't come for me. You little theater kids who listen to this, like, don't come for me. I get it. I love the theater. I will support you, but. Y'all know.
It's rough.
There's some shady dealings. Shady dealings.
Well, if you think about Hollywood.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, that's kind of how we started and where we're at. And so now I just tell everyone, like, you know, I look back at little 14-year-old Austin, who had just, you know, picked up his second book on witchcraft, which was Protection and Reversal Magic by Jason Miller. I went from Silver Ravenwolf to Jason Miller in like a year. Except for I was still like super hardcore Silver Ravenwolf. I just loved her writing style as a teenager.
I think that's why she was so popular. There was something very comforting about her.
Yes.
Silver Ravenwolf always had this like, I'm your witchy teacher.
Yeah, like I'm your witchy auntie.
I'm your high priestess, but I'm also mom.
Yes.
She had the mom feel.
Yeah, she very much has that kind of feel. And I'm fortunate enough that I have met her. I've got to see her talk. I'm very fortunate that with some of the stuff that I have pursued and with the the ability to travel and audition. And when I did the audition circuit, I got to go to some places where, strangely enough, where the performing arts are big is also where magic and the occult would also be big.
Wow.
Shocker. and I got to meet some really cool people and work with some really cool people. So yeah, you know, and I think I've done a lot of the whole gamut,
mm-hmm.
but really just my practice kind of recently in the last several years has really settled around Hecatean practice. And mm-hmm.
But you get to use that though. Because mm-hmm. when we went to the seance, I told Chelsea, I'm like, oh, his voice, he's got a beautiful voice. Like yeah. it's a perfect fit, don't you think? Like it just kind of came together.
It's funny how that comes together, because there is something called the voce magicae in the Greek magical papyri, which is a lot of what modern Hecatean practice could be considered built off of,
uh-huh.
since she is prolific in that. And you also look at the Chaldean oracles, where she's considered the world soul, and the voces magicae, the act of speaking things into existence, words such as Actiophis, it's actually Oski Katoski Eron Orion.
Oh, yes. Yeah. My goodness, that one, huh? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're barbarous words, and sometimes they mean things, other times they're nonsensical. But what it's supposed to do and what it's supposed to be is it's supposed to help us access an altered state.
Yes.
And something I also think is really cool that we would see with those things is with the constant repetition of those, if you were doing them either soloistically or in a group, it would almost create like a spirit box phenomenon. Where if you are mm-hmm. in an altered state and you're continuing to do that and it creates such rapid white ambient noise.
Yes.
Maybe you would be able to bring something through and actually be able to speak or hear.
Yeah.
Which is why we have audio phenomenons in full moon rituals.
Yeah.
Which
that's just amazing.
Had the shot. So.
That's amazing. So Mike, what would you say is one of your favorite... maybe subject's kind of the wrong word, but what really resonates with you within your practice? Or are you kind of just, do you have a lot of different things?
I have done uh-huh. you know, like a few different things over the years pretty consistently. I've always been kind of a bit of a green witch.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of herbalism.
Oh,
incorporating those things into my personal practice, and also at the shop, I'm the herbalist at the shop,
where you can put the potions together, right? Yeah, you can, yeah. Okay.
Don't let his humbleness. So,
okay.
I think as far as the like what I guess I would consider like the structure or the foundation of my practice, though, I would probably have to say would probably be chaos magic or the philosophy.
Really.
Chaos
and
magic.
What exactly is chaos magic?
So chaos magic is
isn't it a little bit of everything?
It's very misunderstood.
Uh-huh.
I think people hear that, and of course, because of our concepts of chaos, we hear that word chaos, and what we think of that, or what we believe that to be in a modern context. There are a lot of misconceptions, but the concept of chaos as it exists within chaos magic, the philosophy of chaos magic, which really isn't a magical practice. It's really kind of more just an approach to any kind of magical practice. So be practicing anything
mm-hmm.
And bring the philosophy of chaos magic to it.
Wow.
But chaos as it exists within the philosophy of chaos magic is in essence kind of just void for what would be considered like the first pit.
Interesting.
Kind of where everything began.
Okay.
Ultimately, where everything will end.
Uh-huh.
So chaos magic is interesting in that it doesn't really have established rules or structure. Yet at the same time, it must have rules and structure. but the rules and structure that it has are the rules and structure that every individual person has.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's more individualized.
Highly individualistic, okay. Which is one of the reasons why chaos magic as a practice has been around, or as an approach to practice, I should say, has really been around since the early 1900s.
Okay.
But it's something that has always been kind of seen as kind of a bit of like the redheaded stepchild in the occult community, because uh-huh. it's been very hard to define.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you really define it?
You can't. And even yeah. chaos magicians will tell you, like, we don't want to be defined.
Yeah.
You can't define us, because we're all different. But it's also historically, because of that, there has been no establishment of any kind of order or schools of practice or anything mm-hmm. like that. Like, they're just anything like that. You know, you hear of organizations like the Golden Dawn or the Ordo Templi Orientis, these kinds of organizations, and there's nothing like that within the practice of chaos magic.
I totally resonate with that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
To where you kind of just figure, that's kind of how I've always done it on my spiritual journey. I just kind of figure, like the meditation thing, or, you know, I just kind of do what works for me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And there's an emphasis on that. Uh-huh. I think the one tenet that that you're going to find is fairly consistent for the majority of chaos practitioners. And this is one of the things I think that also makes it highly individualistic. And one of the other things I think that also would distinguish it as a practice from many other types of spiritual practices mm-hmm. Is that in chaos magic would be contemporarily considered perhaps more of a shamanistic practice mm-hmm. than something akin to witchcraft, in that it is something that places you as the practitioner in the direct position of being the god force or the creator.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
You know, and that's a tricky thing to explain sometimes.
Yes.
To explain that to people.
Yeah.
You know, when you are practicing under the philosophies of chaos magic, you operate under two things or two realizations. You realize, one, that everything that you experience is filtered through your own perception.
Mm-hmm. Right? Makes
the
sense.
Reality that you experience is all processed through your own perception. So, mm-hmm. so that's one thing to consider. The second thing is, everything that you experience in your life is partially due to what you have created.
Yes.
And so with those two things in mind, you, in essence, whenever you're working any kind of spiritual component, anything you're doing, you, in essence, put yourself into the position of being the god in life.
Okay.
So you become the god or the goddess in your own life, because mm-hmm. you are the creator and ultimately the perceiver of your own reality.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So you don't become a god.
Right.
And you can absolutely still believe in other gods. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I still love and work with Hecate very closely.
Yes.
It's weird when you say Hecate.
So, yeah.
She kept saying that, and I was like, wait.
I alternate back and forth between Hecate and Hecate.
Same.
That's okay. I won't go there, because that's a different tangent. Because Hecate and Hecate, that's not even really her name. It's a title.
Yeah.
But you don't become a god, right?
Right.
Anybody out there is like, oh, I'm a god. You're like, no, you're not. Now you got another problem. You got another,
right.
Yeah, now you got a huge ego issue. And,
right. Yes.
But that would be the one thing I think that would distinguish it from maybe other practices.
Okay.
There is less of an emphasis on theistic belief.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And more of an emphasis on, like, this is all really kind of on you.
Yeah.
If you're doing good things, mm-hmm. then you're doing good things.
Yeah.
And that's on you. And if you're doing bad things, then you're doing bad things. That's on you.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You need to be responsible for what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I find value in that. I think that, unfortunately, a lot of modern practice doesn't put emphasis on the responsibility of practice.
Or the practitioner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing that I will say I did gain from Wicca, because in Wicca there's this concept that is super whitewashed and bastardized, and unless you're actually initiated, you don't actually understand what it's talking about.
I go with the rule of three, all right? Rule of three and an
yeah, I've heard of that one.
Okay, so you have this concept called the Wiccan read. And
which is different, right?
Which is the rule of three? Which the rule of three or the law of three is a part of that has been added to the Wiccan read. The original Wiccan read did not have that. Though the original Wiccan read, I do believe, had "and it harm none, do what thou will" in it, but that's because Joel Gardner was also really close with Aleister Crowley, and part of Aleister Crowley's belief was "do what thou will" be the whole of the law, law under love, or love is the will, or something. Some weird something that I can't remember because I don't practice it anymore. So my mind went defrag.
Right.
It taught me that, so most of the time when we hear the rule of three or the law of three, mm-hmm. people think, oh, if you do bad things come back to you in three. If you do good things come back to you in three. Okay. If you do nothing, nothing happens to you in threes. Or, you know, we get the very watered down version of karma, which is, you know, well, I did something bad, so something bad is going to happen to me that's going to balance the scales. And in most practices of historical witchcraft in general, and magic, that is completely a law that you bind unto yourself. Mm-hmm. The idea that witches are just out here flinging hexes and curses willy-nilly, mm-hmm. and sorcerers are ensorcerling demons to do their will, and warlocks are actively going to attack all these other people, and that's a huge thing that's actually been pushed by a lot of New Age and Christian propaganda.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate because most of what those people are getting, they're actually getting from the practices that we've actually kept alive. But, you know, whatever. So anyway, the Threefold Law the Threefold Law states what you do comes back to you threefold. Three mm-hmm. times good, three times bad, whatever. Essentially. And that's not actually what it means. The law is it true, is it kind, is it necessary?
Oh.
It is a check-in of your moral compass. Are mm-hmm. you know, is this working or going to do? And then it's majority rules from there. Mm-hmm. You know? So let's say I have a client who comes and sits down and she needs me to put a whammy on her ex because he's abusive. Mm-hmm. And the law has failed, justice system has failed, you know, like things do.
Yes.
And so the law of man has failed, so she's coming to me.
Mm-hmm. For help
to get some justice back.
Yeah.
Obviously, I do divination, but I don't necessarily feel that me balancing those energetic scales is going to come back on me or my client. I let them know about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the law of man failed, and so because the law of man, the law of land failed, that is where we have historical uses of hexes and curses. So even with individuals who would claim that Wicca is an ancient religion and the reed is ancient and that the threefold law is an ancient law, it historically and anthropologically is just straight up inaccurate. It is a fallacy. Because even in historical texts of folkloric magical practices, if you look at some of the stuff that you can find from accounts of the witch trials in Spain, in the Mediterranean, in Europe, all throughout that area of the world, it's always, well, I did something bad to this person, and I know I did something bad to them, mm-hmm. and so they cursed me, and this is what's, and so they're a witch. Okay, but can we talk about the healing and the miraculous things that this witch also did?
Mm-hmm.
Your son was bleeding out, and they muttered a charm over your child, and the blood stopped in time for you to actually administer the healing that needs to be healed, or getting them to a physician.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you only hear about the hexes and the curses.
Yeah, the bad
because
things.
Let's be real, the baneful magic's the fun shit.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna be honest. Stuff. Okay, so here's the thing: if I were to tell you, oh my god, I did this really cool ritual over the weekend where I had this really strong visualization of Hecate, and mm-hmm. she was just there, and I got chills. Okay, that's a cool story. But if I were to tell you, so I was doing this spell with Hecate, and I had a beef liver out on my altar. And the candles that I was working this beef liver for the abusive alcoholic narcissistic asshole, they actually like burned down in 3 seconds because they were burning so hot. That's a cool story.
Yeah.
You know, that's entertaining. But historically, it's just not true. And so is it true? Is it kind of isn't necessary? Was something that was kind of held true to a lot of the older covens. But the idea that, which is still even around the age of Gerald Gardner, and when he was big and he was bringing Wicca and witchcraft and New Age spiritism and spiritual stuff and bringing all these to the front of not just Europe, but then over into the West, he still led something called Operation of Cone of Power. Which was he and his coven actually gathered on the shores to raise energy and direct disruptive temperate weather forces to ships of Nazis that were actually coming in to try and attack. And they actively averted the ship.
Wow. That's amazing. That's incredible.
On top of all the work with the government, which is, so even when we look at witchcraft, In a modern day context, witchcraft and magic has always been political and activism. Every spiritual practice has. Because the reality is what happens in the spiritual realm is physically what we see in this realm. Mm-hmm. And what happens in this realm is how we see results in all other realms. And some realms don't even have anything to do with us, and that's completely fine. And so I don't want anything to do with us.
Right.
And so when we look at concepts like karma or the threefold law, they become really, really just another way of an external force trying to tell anyone what to do with their power.
Like mm-hmm. It's fear.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can be.
It can be.
But those are things that you choose for yourself.
Yeah.
This is a conversation mm-hmm. that we have with people.
Yes.
Who will come to classes and things. You know, I recently just, I taught a class and I had a gentleman in the class who, after I provided some information on how to connect to a particular spirit to consecrate a talisman for something that he wanted to do. And, you know, and this was not in any way kind of a spirit that you would consider to be a malicious or an evil spirit. But when I explained to him, you know, kind of the process of how this would work, you know, he obviously became very concerned, you know, and he was very worried about, you know, any kind of, you know, energetic backlash or anything like that, you know, and so I, you know, I had to have that conversation with him. I had to say, you know, like, these are things that, you know, if you choose to incorporate these concepts into your practice, or if you want to structure your practice in this way, then, you know, then that's totally valid. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think that in doing that, a lot of people, they limit their experience of things, you know, and then they unfortunately often put themselves in the position of making that decision for others as well, which can be really unfortunate, I think.
Exactly.
Because then we have a lot of people out there who are spreading what amounts to be misinformation.
Yep.
And there's so much on all the internet, the socials, all the different things, you know. Anyway.
Well, it comes down to something that I personally, and I'm sure Mike has seen this a lot, in a lot of social media and a lot of the more modern context of talking about these things, is everyone's practice is valid. Okay. So then if someone's coming in to correct misinformation, is that still valid?
Right.
Because then what ends up happening is someone gets... feels as if they are being attacked. And then from there, what ends up happening is not a conversation. And this is actually something that happened with one of my most recent videos on TikTok. Not one of my most recent ones, but I posted one that actually is that for some reason, my video on TikTok going like, yo, you know that like the algorithm is what shows you the videos, right? Like Hecate is not sending the 16-year-old to inform you of her presence in your life.
Yes.
You know, my video like that, this person just stitched it and went off talking about how who am I to tell someone their spiritual practice, and she's a high priestess of Hecate, and da 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 da, and my practice is invalid, but everyone else's practice was completely valid.
Wow.
So in the same breath, she was invalidating my practice, told everyone.
Uh-huh.
I was talking about how I've never had a valid spiritual experience.
Wow.
And that no one should listen to me. Meanwhile, as this woman is going off, I go back and I look through her videos, and she's the one who's constantly complaining about being a victim. She's always like being told that she's wrong. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe if you took a minute to listen and not be a victim right now, instead of being a victim, be a creator.
Yeah.
You know, break out of that Karpman drama triangle.
You're right.
You know, be a creator. And instead of viewing me as a persecutor, how about you view me as a challenger?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. How about you view me going, or hear me out. Spiders are showing up to you in the winter as a sign of Hecate, not because of winter at all. It's not that winter is a thing and they're coming inside.
Right, because they want to be warm too.
You know, it's not that.
Yeah.
It's most definitely a primordial Titaness sending you a daddy long leg near your trash can.
Yes.
Where they normally would be, or in the corner of your house, mm-hmm. where they normally would be.
Yeah.
Or around your door.
Uh-huh.
That's the sign you need. Not the fact that you have a little black dog that follows you around everywhere that annoys you. That's not the sign you need.
Right.
Not that historical thing. That historical anthropological connection. No. The you peaching on the TikTok. That's the validation you need.
Yeah.
And so I came back with this like, listen, if your unverified personal gnosis is yours, that's great. I don't share a good majority of my practice in UPG because that's mine.
Mm-hmm.
That is sacred to me. That is between me and my spirits and what I do.
Yeah.
What I do share are experiences and lessons that I have learned through historical contexts, through research, through academia, through experience, and then present them with, like Mike was talking about chaos magic, present them with my perceptions
mm-hmm.
of how I work them. And what you get to do, and this is the lovely thing about magical practices, is you get to take that and go, I like that, and I understand that. I don't understand this. Can I go deeper? Or is it not worth my time?
Mm-hmm.
And you get to allow yourself to go deeper. And so when people get upset because, you know, you go, well, actually, do you know? I guess I shouldn't, well, actually. But when you're bringing up like we should look at this way, or here's actually the historical roots of that, and you're trying to educate, and then you're getting yelled at and told how awful you are because you were like, so you know that Hecate and the Morrigan are not the same deity, right? Like they're not separate cultures. Separate people. They roll over separate things, really, we're looking at. They're not the same. You know? So when we look at those things, that's one of the big things that it's important for me to remember is that not only is everyone's practice different, and yeah, everyone's practice is valid, but I want to encourage the people who want to learn from me to empower themselves.
Yeah.
And I want them to empower themselves and not feel like they have to hold themselves to archaic ideas of what they have been told.
Mm-hmm. Doing things a certain way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I just talked about today because someone posted about using sage and a curse. And I was like, okay, yeah, you could totally do that. It nullifies the energies around the person. If you're actually doing it correctly and you know what you're doing, then yeah, every plant spirit can be utilized that way. They all have shadow aspects. And this person was being completely judgmental. And I was just like, aren't you the intentions everything person?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I thought intentions everything. Uh-huh. So what is it? Is it not everything?
I'm confused.
Or are we actually going to go with correspondences? Because I'm telling you right now that has some correspondences that relate to shadow.
Yeah.
But whatever. You know? So I forgot what got me on that subject at this point. I'm just babbling.
We're talking about validity.
Yeah.
And I think that when we're talking about validity, particularly when it comes to spirituality, I think that it's a conversation that we need to kind of flip on its head a little bit, mm-hmm. because to look at spirituality in context of validity is a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because going to church, choosing the option to go to church and then to be Christian and practice Christianity is perfectly valid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's mm-hmm. wrong with that? Mm-hmm. Right. So validity needs to be taken out of the concept or mm-hmm. out of the context of that conversation. You know, I think instead of validity, it really comes down to is your practice something that is really enriching your life?
Yes.
Exactly.
Is your practice something that is giving results?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is your practice something that is, I mean, you know, with the example that you gave with this person that kind of came for you who was very argumentative, mm-hmm. you know, and then in looking at some of what they were having going on in practice, you know, mm-hmm. they were having a lot of experiences, but for the most part, these were a lot of very negative kinds of experiences,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
you know, and in looking at that, I would be thinking, you know, like your practice is absolutely valid, but it would seem to me that your practice isn't one that you're really
it seems that whole it works for you thing isn't working for you.
You're right.
You're not enjoying this very much, and you're not really getting the results that you would like of this practice. You know, this isn't your life, you know.
It's social media, all it's not that deep.
Right.
So I think that, you know, the whole argument around like everybody's practice is valid is an argument.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really needs to be like, is your practice something that is really working?
Mm-hmm.
Does it work for you? Does it feel good? Does
Have
it,
you yeah. seen results?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
You know, I always see the reminders of blow cinnamon into your door at the beginning of the month.
Uh-huh.
I have never done that. I've never known why I would do that. It seems wasteful.
Yeah.
I like cinnamon in a lot of things. On top of that, if your animals eat that, that's not going to be good for them.
No, no.
You know? So I look at that and I'm like, why don't you just do a wash? Like, just make a cinnamon tea with some basil and wash it down. And I see people, like, panic about that. And they get these huge things thinking these are ancient traditions and everyone has to do them. I mean, I have this conversation so often with the Wheel of the Year, uh-huh. and it's not even funny. Every single time someone comes in and it's like Beltane, they're asking me what I do for Beltane, and I just go, well, I work the shop, and then I go home.
And just a day?
Go, oh, it's Beltane. Yeah.
Like, not high days or those.
Exactly.
Because you don't eat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest celestial events for me are full moons and dark moons.
Yeah.
And then solstices and equinoxes are the next.
Yeah.
And my practice seems to be working great for me so
yeah.
far.
Yeah.
So far, I've not had any complaints from clients other than the ones who don't listen to me.
Right.
You guys seem very grounded in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. I
think
we are. I'm sure we have our moments. You know, I think the moments that I'm grounded, I'll just, you know, speaking for myself, the moments in the work that we do, and it's not just the work, even in my own mm-hmm. personal practice, I think the moments that ground me the most are those moments where I see something going on in the spiritual community, or I recognize mm-hmm. something happening in the practice of maybe somebody that I'm in proximity to
mm-hmm.
that has, and it's just in paying attention, right, and seeing what's going on, it's obvious that there's a problem there. You know, like I find that I become ungrounded around my own practice, in my own practice, and just around spirituality in general. When mm-hmm. I see other people faltering in their practice,
okay,
I want so much to be able to support other people in what they're doing, you know, and in being able to find something that they can believe in and find value in, you know, and I want to. Work to make sure that everybody has access to reliable and ethical resources for information, you know, and honest and ethical practitioners and teachers, you know, mm-hmm. and we have some challenges around some of those things sometimes in the spiritual
mm-hmm.
yeah
you know, and so those things definitely do unground me
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I try not to let that ruin my day too much,
you know? Yeah. I'm very similar to Mike when it comes to the feeling of being ungrounded. I feel really ungrounded when I think one of the most ungrounding moments for me, if I'm being honest personally for my practice, is when I'm working myself to the bone, trying to make sure that I have, you know, I have the classes, I have the notes, I have the things, mm-hmm. I have this, I'm working the shop. I'm providing good information. I'm making sure that when people come in, I'm not bombarding them. I'm not overwhelming them, and I'm not underwhelming them. You know, it's all the actual generative and interactive things that really help, that make me feel ungrounded. Mm-hmm. Because when I do have those moments where I get on a roll, it's very easy for someone whose intentions and heart could potentially not be in the right place to trip me up. Mm-hmm. And when I trip up, it used to be worse. but when I trip up, my initial response is anger. My initial response is anger, because I'm afraid now that I'm going to have to defend myself in my practice, and therein my shop and everything else I have to do. Mm-hmm. And like my stance and what I have to work for. And I, in the recent, honestly, I'd like to say years, which is true, but really in the just last few months, that feeling of ungroundedness really has hit a couple of times.
Especially with all the shit going on.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The world is on fire. And I, you know, those moments when you feel powerless are those moments when you need to check in with, where are you expending your power and energy, and how much is it actually benefiting? Mm-hmm. You know, I would love nothing more than to go to protests. I would love nothing more than to do all these things and be boots on the ground. Unfortunately, I have a business to run. Mm-hmm. I have a space to hold for those individuals who are going and doing those things.
Yep.
We have a space and a community that is crying for help and is being overloaded and overwhelmed by the next best pretty thing, whereas true deep connection that is beyond the surface level of a new Louis Vuitton bag is no longer someone's goal when they pursue witchcraft. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people out there who pursue magic and witchcraft and spiritual practices to better themselves. But then there's been this huge push of superficial spirituality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And vapidness of, I mean, I'm going to say it. I've seen practitioners who I used to, at some point in my mind, look at and go, okay, you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Selling, you know, selling the TikTok cord cutting kits with the two candles and a string put together. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no instructions. You're literally handing that to someone and you're charging $30 for it.
Yeah.
Saying, burn these two candles together after you name them, it'll fix it.
Yeah.
Instead of actually doing
teaching.
Like teaching and guiding and saying, like, hey, so maybe it's actually not them where there's a cord. Maybe you actually have some trauma you're not dealing with. Instead of doing this, how about we actually go inside? How about we sit with ourselves? How about we sit in some shadow and see, are we, you know, are we playing victim? Are we bullying? Are we the persecutor? Are we the rescuer? What is going on here? What archetype are we accessing psychologically? That we can then access on a metaphysical, spiritual, and energetic level to bring to light and bring that light side of that shadow, so we can heal and fully integrate.
Yes.
Then you'll notice that your power increases more, and you won't need to cast a spell to get a Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, I've noticed a difference ever since I started therapy almost a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it really does bring such a clear focus to your mind. And when you combined when you approach your spiritual practice, whatever it is for you, holistically, and truly allow yourself to, I don't want to say fall into it, but that's the only way you can describe it. My therapist would say cuddle. Nancy would say cuddle into it.
Cuddle?
So you cuddle into your spiritual practice, or you cuddle into it. You'll find that you have the tools there that you've been learning. Mm-hmm. And by allowing yourself to simply sit in that space, you will be able to take your time to integrate and blend and work it through appropriately. So that way, the next time you interact with something like that, you're not triggered to the point of having a panic attack.
Right.
Yeah. You actually have gained back some of your power and control.
Yeah.
And so it's always been my goal and what I've desired with what we do to bring that effective healing power of magic and the occult to the world, and help people see that they have the power to handle these things. But I'm a living example of how taking your meds and listening to your doctors and going to a therapist and doing the healing work couples just as well with burning my rosemary, my incense,
yep,
diffusing my essential oils and playing with my crystals and light and spells.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people who really are deep into their practice, who are pillars or mentors, me, Mike, and a lot of the authors out there are all that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll fully admit it.
Yeah.
So mine's always been to show that it's possible to actually, this is your life to live,
mm-hmm,
and you can live it, and it doesn't have to look any other way.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to look any way that you think it should look like.
Yes.
You know, I always have to remind my students, you're comparing yourself to me. I've literally made this my living and my job.
Yeah.
Your master's degree is in accounting.
Yeah.
Like you don't need to have my practice.
Yes.
You know?
Yep. Yeah.
So anyway, I'll stop babbling and rambling.
I think people, though, when people do that too, it's they look up to both of you and want to be like you. Does that make sense?
But
they can't, right?
It is something that we have found happens.
Being a mentor and a teacher.
Yeah, you get put on this pedestal, right, mm-hmm, and you become like almost more than human.
Uh-huh.
And then when you have those very human moments, everything falters and everything falls down and you're the worst thing in the world. And it's like I literally just had a human moment.
Right.
You know? And so I'm thankful enough that with my current group of students that I teach, a lot of them are very aware of that. So, I mean, there have been several classes that I've taught where I've had to have a student, like, they've popped into the class to be like, they popped into the shop to be like, will you send me the notes to class? Because you forgot. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Sorry.
Yeah.
And instead of thinking that I'm intentionally ignoring them, they're actively coming to me and going, you're a human, you're busy, you have lots of things that
you do.
And I appreciate that so much.
Yeah.
Because like I'm not perfect.
Right.
I don't strive to be perfect. I'm just here to do the best I can.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love that story. That's amazing.
That we all of us in some form. But sometime in our lives, all of us, I think, have had someone that we've looked up to as a mentor, as a guide, as a teacher, as you know, but, you know, who knows, whatever that relationship may be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Someone we idolize at some point, right? And I think that the important thing to remember, you know, in looking at particularly people, and I'm not talking about myself or Austin here, but just anybody, you know, to your viewers, to the people who follow your podcast, you know, anybody that you would come into alignment with in your own spiritual work, any kind of teacher, any kind of mentor, you know, before you find yourself falling into the pattern of, you know, wanting to like, I want to be like them. I want my practice to be their practice. I want to be like them. I want to
have who you are first.
Like, you know,
yeah.
You, yes, you need to know who you are first. That very is so important. But you also need to remember that person that you're idolizing, you're seeing someone who has probably, ideally, is hopefully got to a point of relative success in their practice after what has had to have been many years of failure. Like that's the one thing that we don't really focus on. The one thing that we don't really talk about is honestly, I think, you know, is that everybody who's gotten to a point where they're really winning at something, they've seen a lot of failure.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't want to talk about failure, right? Because we don't want to focus on that. But we need failure to ultimately be able to refine the plan, you know, and figure out what
absolutely
really works,
yes,
to the point where we're really winning.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's something to bear in mind, you know. So, you know, when you look at someone like Austin and you're like, oh, I want my practice to be like yours.
No, you don't.
You realize, or me, you know, like I want to have the knowledge that you have. Realize, like, well, you can absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to probably take you at least this many years, and
you got 20 years ahead of you.
This much time to make mistakes and do the wrong thing, and to waste this much time because that's what I did.
Yeah,
you know, you'll
live and learn, right?
Before I finally figured it out.
You know? Yeah,
and I'm still figuring.
I mean, we're constantly in that state.
I think we're always going to be in that state, honestly.
Yeah.
Right? You just keep growing, growing, growing.
Yeah.
Based off your path.
Oh yeah. Well, the way that I practice and the way that I work with my craft now is completely different than how it even looks like 3-4 months ago.
Yeah.
You know?
It would have to be. We're always evolving.
Yeah.
And I think as we continue to evolve as people, the other aspects of our life need to include our spiritual practice.
Yeah, what a boring place it would be if we didn't all, you know, change and grow and learn and evolve and become different people. Or
exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Exactly. I think that's one of the reasons why more and more, you know, and of course it's a very complex kind of conversation or issue, right? But I think more and more, I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are falling away.
I agree.
I think, you know, not even taking into account a lot of the more problematic elements of religion, but I think that you're dealing with a number of people now that are recognizing, like, well, the world has kind of moved on a bit in a lot of ways. You know, cultures are different. Society is different. Each generation that comes into the world is different and has different values.
Yeah.
It looks at things very differently. And you've got these religions that have been around for some of them for, like, thousands of years now. Like, oh, no, we won't change.
They just kind of don't fit anymore.
We've always done it. This is who we are.
Right? Yeah.
And it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the religions, a lot of them they're figuring it out, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're trying to make changes, but it's like, you're a few centuries behind.
Right.
Right. You gotta make some real radical changes real fast.
Catch up to the times.
Yeah, because your flock is getting pretty thin.
Yeah, right.
Even with the culture here, they've been, I've noticed.
Yeah.
Some things have changed a little bit.
Yeah.
I made the mistake of going down like the Exmo wormhole.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
I find it highly fascinating.
Yes.
I
almost got sucked into some of that the other day.
I was following that rabbit hole.
I
heard about the CES letter. And I was like, what's the CES letter? And so then I looked that up and I just went down this rabbit hole and I was like, these poor people.
That's good information for you to have, though, because with the shop where we are here in Salt Lake City, Utah, we deal consistently with people who are kind of in that ex-Mormon territory.
Oh, yeah,
They've left that religion. Not all of them ex-Mormon, right? But they've left that religion, and they are still hungry. They still need something. Just put that faith in, you know, but they need that thing to exist outside of the structure of an arrow forward.
Direction a little bit.
You may not want to do what we do, but we're here to show you that there are at least options.
Yeah. I love that you're there to help people and people reach out.
I finished up my reader shift yesterday and I came out and Mia was talking on the phone to a customer who was just all in a panic. And I was like she got the phone and went, you too? And she was like, were all of your clients that you met with yesterday, today, a little on edge? I'm like, yeah, there is something in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, all my clients were on edge. Not in a bad way. Like, I'm not saying being on edge is bad.
Just anxious. Yeah.
But most definitely, like, there was a lot of, like, my favorites were the ones who came in and I was like, are we just doing Reiki? And they were like, yes. And I was like, oh, thank God.
It makes sense if you look at, you know, I mean, it can be enough to handle your own personal challenges, right? And then you compile that with a lot of just the emotional stress.
Living
just the world.
World right now, you know, and particularly with what we're dealing with right now in the U.S.
Yeah.
There's so much fear and uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's hitting so many different aspects of our society.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so many, you know, and certain communities certainly are feeling it a lot.
A lot more.
A lot. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Others, right? So, I don't know. So people are going to need to, they're going to be feeling anxious.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you do the card, the tarot, and the Reiki. What else do you do? Tell me everything you do.
I do pretty much everything except astrology and palmistry.
Okay.
I don't do geomancy either.
What is that?
I'll let Mike talk about geomancy.
Okay. Yay.
Mainly what most people come to see me for at the shop. I am a psychic medium there. But
yes.
I push everyone to Anthony because I'm like,
He's still new at it.
He's your protege.
Yes. Yeah. I've done mediumship long enough that I'm just like, I guarantee
been there,
you,
done that.
The girl you've talked to 19 times since she died does not want to talk to you right now. And I'm not going to make something up because someone else made something up for you.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Most of the time people come to me for, they'll come to me for readings. I'll usually incorporate a combination of tarot and oracle in the morning.
Uh-huh.
Consultations. So I have a lot of clients who come to me for spell work consultations. In a spell work consultation, it looks like everything from sitting down and you going, I want to handle this and I don't know what to do, and me pulling cards and giving you information and pointing the right direction to the shop, to I need you to do a spell for me, to me going, all right, well, here's what we need to do and here's what I need you to get and this is what we're going to do.
Oh, cool. I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. but what a lot of people have been coming to see me more recently for, and what a lot of other practitioners in the area send my way, anyone who generally tends to be crossed up, hex, cursed, jinxed, evil eye. basically when people come into contact with something that's actually, that is going to require more to remove and get rid of and fix than burning some Palo Santo. then usually they'll send them to me.
Okay.
And that's fine. I've always had a talent for that. Every teacher I've learned from was very talented at clearing spaces. I've always just kind of had a knack for getting rid of things. So I'm glad I can provide that. But I do a lot of Reiki. I love Reiki. I've told Mike several times, if all I could do on Wednesdays was just be booked from 11 to 6 with Reiki appointments,
You'd be good.
I would be so happy.
Yeah.
I love Reiki. Much like Oprah loves bread, I love Reiki. It's an internet thing.
Oh, I know. It's just years old.
I just finished my level 1 and 2 Holy Fire with a new group of students, which was really awesome, because these are students. Only one of these students has ever taken any classes from me before. The rest were all new. And so this was completely new. They've never had a Reiki session with me. They got to get a little bit of a new perspective on how I practice Reiki and the values. And it was really nice. I really quite enjoyed it.
Because they were just fresh and didn't, right?
Yeah. Awesome. And when you learn Reiki from me, you always get a little bit of a different perspective that's not just, I focus on Reiki and how it can benefit you in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And others in and of itself. I don't bring in pendulums. I don't really, I bring in crystals, but the only crystals I bring in are quartz. Mm-hmm. And that's not until your master level usually, or maybe even your second degree.
Wow.
You know, I focused and give complete and total honor to the tradition of Reiki and to the what I learned. Because the bells and whistles don't make it more powerful.
Okay.
You know, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I love a good sound bowl session, just like the next person. I love a good sound healing sesh, but there's something to be said about sitting and listening to cheesy spa music while someone does Reiki on you, and you you come back an hour later feeling like you've rested for an entire week.
Right. Yeah.
But I will let Mike talk about geomancy.
Yes, what is that?
So geomancy is a system of casting of blocks. It would be comparable to chain.
All these new things.
So geomancy is it's something that's been around. It's about as old as astrology.
Wow.
And it's something that is believed to have originated in Africa.
Uh-huh.
And then it moved throughout the Middle East, where it was most commonly practiced. And you would typically cast lots to generate random sequences of ones, twos, and then you group those together in specific ways to create glyphs or shapes or other sequences of ones and twos. Uh-huh. And then through a process of some kind of like mathematical calculation, you put all those glyphs into a chart, and then you build the chart, and the chart is in essence kind of meant to give you a forecast in the same way that you would do something tarot reading.
Okay.
But you can then also build that chart out differently in the way that you would do an astrological horoscope.
Okay.
So I do geomancy at the shop, and so I will do charts for people, do them readings.
Yeah.
Or to do like horaries, like an astrological horary. Only I work with geomancy.
Wow.
That's interesting. I want to get that done.
I know, that sounds... I teach a class at least once a year.
Oh my gosh.
The geomancy is really cool and I find it fascinating. I just can't get it.
Yeah, I probably would be that person too.
And it's one of those things where you start to learn. I teach the class and I think at least the first 2 weeks of the class, everybody's eyes, all the students...
They're glossed over. Eyes, yeah.
and they'll even...
I don't get it.
And then by the third week, they're like, oh, it clicks. Get it. I know what I'm doing.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I've never heard it. Have you heard of that, Chelsea?
I haven't.
No.
Yeah, it's awesome. Really great.
Yeah, it's called geomancy. It's also called Ramal Shastra.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
I might be into that.
Yeah, she might.
I'm very into astrology.
Yeah, she was.
And I was going to ask you what your signs were.
So I'm a Pisces.
Okay.
You already know what Austin is, don't you?
Yeah, I remember everybody. So I remember your Virgo moon and Gemini sun and rising, right?
I'm a Virgo rising.
Oh, that's right.
Virgo. But yes, my moon is also Virgo.
Okay.
My sun is Gemini. Yeah.
Okay, I just mixed up the...
So if you want the extra sun, I'm a Pisces sun. I'm a Sagittarius rising.
Okay.
I'm a Virgo moon.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yes, everyone in our household has a Virgo moon.
It's an interesting dynamic.
My son has a Virgo moon.
Virgo moons are the best. We know how to always be right because we have a sun.
Right. Yeah. Jeremy, too.
Yeah. Oh, Jeremy.
My brother.
Yeah. My son. Oh, my gosh. He is, too. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's so funny.
It's really funny when we get into astrology because I've never been big into astrology. I've always been like, you're not an asshole because you're Aquarius. You're an asshole because you're an asshole. Right. You know? But this series of books came out called The Magic or the Power of Your Sun Sign. And they're written by Ivo Dominguez Jr. And then he usually has someone else come on. You have the book.
Yeah, the Leo. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep.
They're really awesome. I read the Gemini Witch one and I was like, not me. In a metaphysical shop, making all of the smell goods.
Yeah.
Loving tiger eye.
those books are they're very spot on, and they definitely call you out.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I haven't picked up the Pisces yet, but I've had a chance to kind of flip through some of the others, and they're really good. I think the last time I read a book on astrology that I enjoyed as much on a Rotten Day book series that came out, they came out years ago. And forgive me, I cannot remember the author's name now, but she's a very well-known astrologer. And she wrote a series of books and they're all, one is like, it's like love on a rotten day and like friendship on a rotten day.
Okay.
Career on a rotten day, and they're all, it's all astrology, but it's all the, like the bad stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's funny because if you read through these books, basically the whole idea is like these are the things you need to be aware of so that you can modify your behaviors.
Oh, yeah.
So that you don't have to have
bad, rotten days. Yeah.
They're brilliant books and they're hilarious.
Oh, that's awesome. Writes
these books is so funny. Yeah. But the new books.
Yeah.
Series, yeah.
They're good. I need to finish mine. I'm not a huge reader. I like to listen, but I do have it sitting on the end table in the living room that I read it every once in a while.
I love audiobooks, but the problem is I put audiobooks on when I'm going to sleep. So almost through with Dune. I don't know what's going on.
Put that on like during the day while you're doing little chores around the house.
Yeah. See, I listen to them in the morning after I've showered when I'm getting ready for the day or, sitting at my desk. And so 30 to 45 minutes a day. And I love it. It's a habit. If I don't have something to listen to, something's not right. Anyway, thank you so much, Mike and Austin, for traveling out here in the blizzard to join us. I love it. I'm so grateful that you were able to come and were willing.
Yeah,
yes. And everybody, we will be releasing episodes every Friday, just as a reminder. And please go to our YouTube channel at How to Use Spirit and subscribe. We're also on all of the socials, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. And we will see you soon. Thank you.